Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, joining us once again, is our senior senator and Senate leader, Senator Charles Schumer. Welcome back.
Greg, it's always good to be back. And yes, I am the majority leader, the first ever from New York. What do you think of that?
I'm very proud of you.
A minute ago, before we went on the air, we were talking. I said to Greg, folks, I said, I'll bet he's a Mets fan. I could just tell. And I knew he was raised in Queens.
And then he asked me,
And I said, I'm a Yankee fan because there were no Mets when I was a little boy. The only teams in town were the Dodgers had left when I was five. We used to say in Brooklyn, the three most evil men of the 20th century were Hitler, Stalin, and O'Malley. And the Mets didn't come until I was 12. So there was no Mets. And that was that. So I'm a Yankee fan and I'm loyal. So I've been loyal the whole way through.
Well, I certainly understand why you are a Yankee fan. My father was a devoted Giant fan, New York Giants. He loved the Polo Grounds. He loved Willie Mays, that Monty Irving, that entire team. Yes. So I understand. I just never understood why he was rooting for the Giants when I was rooting for the Mets. But then he explained to me that he was listening to the home run Bobby Thompson hit. The radio was on top of the refrigerator, and he was on top of the refrigerator when he heard the home run. And he said,
golly.
By the time Bobby Thompson touched home plate, he was on the floor underneath the refrigerator.
Well, Greg, if there's a Subway Series, you and I will go together. And you'll wear your Mets shirt, and I'll wear my Yankees shirt, and we'll see who wins.
That sounds like a plan. You got it. Looking forward to it. So the last time you joined us, we discussed the COVID relief package, which came through. And we were just discussing getting back on track after COVID. So now that you're here, we want to begin the discussion with the awful pain felt across communities in our nation almost daily due to gun violence.
Yes.
I know that you did something, you and your colleagues did something about it, but we know it wasn't enough, but it was a step in the right direction. And since then, we had another shooting after 4th of July. So we want to discuss that.
Okay, well, first, I'm passionate about this. People may not know this. As you know, Greg, I was in the House for 18 years before I got to the Senate and beat D'Amato in 98. And I was the author of the Brady Law, the background checks law. I was the author in the House of the assault weapons ban. They both passed. And it's one of the things I'm proudest I've done, because there are literally tens of thousands of people walking the streets. The Brady Law is still in effect. The assault weapons ban, when we passed it, we didn't have enough votes. So we went to people and said, please vote for it. They said, I'll vote for it if you put a 10-year sunset. We thought we could renew it after 10 years. But then George Bush got in. We didn't think he would be in. And he was not for it. So it went away. But gun violence, these guns that are on our streets are killing our kids. Sometimes they're in mass shootings, and those are awful. Sometimes it's just on street corners. But, you know, the pain of a family, whether their kid is shot on a street corner or at a mass shooting, is no different. They have lost their child, one of the worst things that could befall anybody. So let me say a few things about this. First, I was up in Buffalo 2 days after. I saw a little boy, 3 years old. His mom told me the story and he sort of chimed in. It was his birthday. His dad said, I'm just going to run over to the top supermarket, son, and buy you a birthday cake. He never saw his father again. The man was shot by a white supremacist. The only reason he was shot, he was a black man in a supermarket. And the pain in that community was enormous. And I had a particular link, Greg, to that community, because years before, actually, one of your fellow union members, the UFCW, Top Supermarkets was going to be taken over by an anti-union company called Price Chopper. And I helped stop it and got Tops to win. So the head of Tops, Mr. Nanula, calls me up once Tops took over the Price Chopper instead of the other way. And he said, what can I do for you? You did so much for us. And they stayed union the whole time. They stayed union, which I loved. And I said, why don't you build a supermarket on the east side of Buffalo? It's a food desert. These poor folks are paying through the nose for, you know, bread and milk and eggs and the kind of commodities that shouldn't cost you that much. And he built it. I didn't know it would become a community center, but so I had a particular link. Then we went to Uvalde and we saw the pictures there. And, you know, any one of us who has had 8, 9, 10 year olds, did you see those smiling kids with their trophies and their T-shirts with their name and they're gone? And again, through a bigoted shooting, I believe, it was just awful. And then we, of course, saw what just happened on July 4th over there near Chicago. So for the first time, the NRA has a vice-like grip on the Senate, particularly on the Republicans. They almost all do what they want. Mitch McConnell listens to the NRA. But there was such a, you know, and by the way, the NRA has called me public enemy number one several times. It's something I'm proud of because I fight them tooth and nail. But all of a sudden, all of the pain of this shootings said, maybe we can get something done. And Chris Murphy, a senator from Connecticut, who came from Sandy Hook, where all those children were shot in 2013, those 5, 6, 7 year olds, oh, breaks your heart. He said, I think I might be able to persuade some Republicans. I said, I will encourage you to do it. Some people, some of our people wanted to just say, put the bill on the floor and let's see if they vote yes or no. You know, the whole background check.
Sure. Yeah, right.
But a lot of the gun groups came to us. Chris and I talked and said, we're tired of just putting the bill on the floor, showing who's right and showing who's wrong. We need to get something done, even if you have to compromise. So we spent about 2 weeks and we passed a bill. That's a good bill. I mean, it's not everything we want. I want universal background checks. I want an assault weapons ban. I want a lot more. But it did say that they're going to do that any 18-year-old, because in both Uvalde and in Buffalo, the kids just turned 18 and bought the gun. In the Chicago, I think he was less than 21 when he bought these guns. And they're going to say they have to check with the local police and the school authorities and the FBI before they get him a gun to see if there's any trouble, because each of these kids had trouble. It also would provide red flag laws where a family member who thought there was someone in their family or a friend said, this guy shouldn't have a gun. He's going to do some bad things. You could go to court and get the gun taken away. And it did more for straw purchases and for background checks. So is it everything we wanted? No. Is it the first time we've broken the grip of the NRA? They opposed the bill, of course, and got something done. Yes. But we got to keep going, and we're going to keep going. I'm not going to rest till all these damn guns are off our streets. They're killing our kids.
And I'm sure, unfortunately, after the July 4th incident, you picked up more support for what you did. And
absolutely,
more support to go further.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, it just breaks my heart to hear that ordinary citizens, kids, have high-powered weapons that outgun our law enforcement.
It's outrageous.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's horrible.
It doesn't make any sense. Oh. So, the shooting in Buffalo was an act of terror and hate. And you mentioned white supremacy. What is being done to combat the rise?
Well, here we don't have here we don't have the Republicans going along with us. So we had a bill sent up by Senator Durbin from Illinois. He's head of our Judiciary Committee. It was an anti-white supremacy bill. It got every Democratic vote and the Republicans wouldn't let it get done. But we are making sure that the FBI and our federal agencies are paying a lot more attention. White supremacy is gaining in this country lately. You know, some of the right-wing newscasters, these right-wing conspiracy things, call it the replacement theory. They believe, listen to this, you'll love this one. They believe the Jews are replacing whites with blacks and Asians and browns coming to America. This is how I was going to curse and say how X'd up they are, but I won't say it on your show. But the crazy theories, but these people are doing bad things. And we are redoubling efforts of our law enforcement to find them, go after them, and when they ever step over the line and break the law, arrest them. And so I think you're going to see some real action there. They just arrested a guy who was within, he was bragging, he was within, he's a white supremacist, He was within 20 feet of me on January 6th. And he said I was trying to get him, but he couldn't get me. I had a police officer with me, and we went the other way.
Yeah, I heard that, and I heard him talking about it. He didn't know he was convicting himself when he said
that. Yeah, he was. He was. Yeah. These guys are such horrible people.
Yeah. Christopher Wray testified, I believe it was last year, at the in front of Congress, and he was asked about the greatest threat, and he said white supremacy. And I paid attention to him then. It was before the January 6th. So it could have been, it was prior to January 6th, the insurrection. And he mentioned that. And I paid attention to him.
Because, yeah, well, we got to pass this Domestic Terrorism Act, Greg.
Yeah.
It's called the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act. And it addresses the terrorism that the conspiracy theorists have. And as I said, not one Republican would vote for it. They say they want to lift these. They say they wanted to lift these communities up, but didn't lift a finger to pass legislation that would give government more tools to go after these people. And it's a real danger in America. Mm-hmm. I say this, you know, there people have bad instincts. None of us are 100% pure, you know. But in the past, the leaders of our country, Democrats and Republicans, would always push down people's racism and bad instincts and stuff like that, you know. And of course, you know, Democratic presidents like Obama and Biden and Clinton did it. But so did Reagan and Bush.
Yes, they did. Yes,
Trump
they did.
Was the first guy when there was these ugly feelings in people, bigoted feelings, racist feelings, white supremacist feelings, that he never pushed it down. On the best days, he wouldn't say anything negative. And on the worst days, he'd almost lift it up.
Yeah. Well, here's something. You mentioned the replacement theory. Donald's mother came from Europe.
Yeah.
My parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, my great-great-grandparents, their parents were all born here.
That's right.
We were here when the country started. We trace our roots back to the 1700s. So when they say, go back to where you came from, we've only known at that time it was America.
You tell
me. And it was the United States.
Yes.
We were here when the 13 colonies started. We go way back.
There's a great story about this. Can I tell this story?
Yes, you can.
In the book 1619, you know, it was written by that New York Times reporter. I met her. She moved me. So she said her father was brought up in the Mississippi Delta, one of the most racist places in America. But he enlisted in World War II. And, you know, he was in an all-black unit, but he fought well. He came back. He said, I'm not going back to Mississippi. And he settled in Waterloo, Iowa. And every holiday, he'd lift up the American flag on his front lawn, okay, her father. She said she couldn't understand that. Here they were in a town. They couldn't live where they wanted to live because they were black. He was a bus driver, which wasn't paid well. It was non-unionized because he couldn't get a job, even though he's a very smart, skilled man. So why the heck, she said to herself, would her dad raise the American flag on each of the American holidays? In eighth grade, she was asked by the teacher in her class to draw a flag of the country where her parents came from, okay, where her ancestors came from, and write a little bit about them. Well, when class was over, that was their homework. She conferred with the only other black kid in the class, another black girl. And they said, well, we don't know where we came from. And they decided, and this is so touching, they would draw the American flag because that's the only country they knew. And that's what they did. Isn't that a moving story?
Yes,
and
it's
exactly what you said.
This is.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the picture of my mother's father, Thomas Jackson, in South Carolina. And he was in a uniform. And I said, I was 10. I said, Grandpa, what uniform is that? He said, that's the United States Army uniform. He said, I served in World War I.
Wow.
My brother and I looked at each other and said, World War I? He said, yes. And he had the picture, he had a rifle. He had the hat, the brim hat. He looked like a Boy Scout, but he wasn't. He served in World War I.
Wow, wow.
I don't think he saw any combat duty, but I know he had his rifle. And
well, you know, I was able, there was a veteran in Albany, a black veteran who fought in the World War I, who deserved the Medal of Honor. and he wasn't given it because he was black. I had a staffer. You needed contemporaneous of reporting of the bravery. And I had a staffer who went back into the Pentagon archives, and we got him the Medal of Honor.
Wow.
And she was now in Albany. Albany, New York.
Albany, New York. Oh, wow.
Isn't that something?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Henry Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah, Henry Johnson.
Henry Johnson. Thank you very much.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And this young lady went deep into the Pentagon archives and found General Pershing, the head of the forces, wrote that week about how brave Johnson was. And then I had to push real hard all the defense bureaucracies to give him the Medal of Honor, but he got it. It was big celebration in Albany, and both black and white veterans organizations pushed very hard for it.
Wow. I could tell you the way when you serve, it's a difference when you're out there. You don't care who's next to you. If they got that same uniform on, they fighting with you. Your brothers in arms.
One of my great moments was, you know, I got people into
and West sisters Point. In arms. Yeah,
I got people into West Point, you know, early on in the Congress. And I went up there and I saw a guy from Brooklyn who I'd gotten in, a black guy. And now he was a lieutenant in the tank commander. And he'd go by and all these white soldiers, many of them from the South, many of them in those days from bigoted type places, were standing at attention and saluting him. It was a great moment. The military is often a great equalizer.
Yes, it is.
It has its problems too, but it does.
Yes. So as we well know, the Supreme Court's recent decision to overturn Roe versus Wade has disheartened many Americans. And I could say with at least 67% of the country in favor of leaving Roe versus Wade the way it is, that's two-thirds of our country. And I've never seen the minority rule the majority. We were always taught majority rules. Two-thirds is the majority. Whether you're Democrat, Republican, two-thirds are the majority. And I just can't fathom looking at my daughter when she told me how disappointed she was and what was going on. So what can we do?
Okay, so first, let me just say I am appalled by this decision. You know, courts in America have always granted rights, expanded rights. This is the first time it's a right-wing, anti-American, MAGA court appointed by Trump and the MAGA Republicans to move the country back 100 years. And they've done a lot of bad decisions. You saw the gun decision, the concealed carry.
Yes, I did.
And, yeah. And then there's another one which says when federal agencies try to protect average people, they're not allowed to anymore. They're not allowed to. That's like in the 1890s. They did that all this week. And of course, Roe, maybe the most appalling of all. It's an outrageous decision. This is the first time in America in a long time your children will have less rights than you did or your parents did because of what they did. But we are going to fight this decision tooth and nail. First, we're fighting it in all three levels of government. The federal government, the Biden administration, seeing what they're doing. We're looking here in the Congress of things we might be able to do, even though we got no Republican support on this issue, no Republican support. And of course, you need 60 votes. That's at the moment right now. Second, we're seeing what the states can do. New York State has done some very good changes in the law so that to help. And whatever we can do at the federal level to encourage, to make sure that people want to travel to another state because they can't get an abortion in their own state should be able to make sure these medicines are available, you know, the pill.
Yes. The abortion pill.
The abortion pill, we're trying to make that available too, as well. There's also got to be demonstrations, and that's important, and peaceful protest that doesn't end in a week or two, and that's being worked on. And third is the ballot box in November. You know, if we gain two more senators, we have a much better chance to codify women's rights and the right to choose. And, you know, because we had we have two senators who won't change the rules for this. So I would urge people, fight very hard. If we Democrats gain two senators and we keep the House, we might be able to do something real there. But let me say one thing in conclusion about this. You'll see where I'm getting in a minute. My father passed away in November. He was 90. He'd been 99 on D-Day. He was a world, not on D-Day, on Flag Day. He was a World War II vet. And, you know, for those of us who've been close to our parents and when they pass, they're with us. He's right here with me. And he taught me two things, Greg. Number one, always try to help people who need help. That's the most noble thing you can do, to reach out a lending hand, help people. And second, he taught me that if you're doing the right thing and you don't give up and you persist, God will reward you and you will succeed. That has motivated me my whole life. I believe in this issue. If we don't give up and we try all the different routes that I've been talking about, we will succeed. So I urge people not to throw up their hands in despair, but there are a variety of things you can do, whether it's working for candidates, whether it's protesting, whether it's talking to your local, state, and federal legislators. Get out and do it. We will win this fight. We cannot have America regress.
Now, you mentioned something about the federal government can't protect ordinary citizens, and you said it just happened. Tell us about that, because that's really under the radar.
In the past, the Congress would say, this was on air pollution, to protect you from breathing in poison air or whatever, we're going to let the EPA set up rules. This court decision, this right-wing, anti-American, MAGA Republican court said, no, the agencies can't make rules anymore. Congress has to. But we all know that Congress is paralyzed much of the time.
Yeah.
And this ruling could extend not only to air pollution and water pollution, which it was directly on, but like when the FDA protects you against quack medicines, when the CDC protects you against disease. When the labor
and food and everything else,
our NLRB and our boards protect you from being taken advantage of as a worker. Yeah. All of these things could go away. This is serious stuff. This court is awful. But I'm telling you, I have never seen, and I'm going to have to go and conclude on this at 4 minutes.
Yes.
I have never seen more people energized. We Democrats are working hard to pick up seats in the Senate. As I said, if we pick up two seats, a lot can change, as you can see by where we are. And I have never seen people more energized. Right now, if the election were held today, we're in good shape, much better shape than people think. The House not quite as good as us, but please work across the country. We can, you know, no one thought we could take back the Senate. And we did with 50 votes. 50 votes is very hard and doesn't get us everything we want. But all 50 votes, because we didn't get any help, allowed us to put in a first African-American Supreme Court justice and 70 good progressive judges.
The Supreme Court justice, that's a woman.
Yes, Ketanji Brown Jackson, first woman Supreme Court, African-American woman Supreme Court justice. It allowed us to get the ARP money out, which is helping people and providing broadband for people in inner communities, helping small businesses and at churches and everything else. So that got us somewhere, but we need more, and we're going to fight to get more till we win. Again, my daddy taught me, if you're doing the right thing and you persist, you will win. And that's the lesson of MLK. That's the lesson of John Lewis. That's the lesson of so many people. So folks, Greg and I will be working with you. Let's persist and we will win.
Thank you. You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, our very special guest was Senator Charles Schumer of New York. Thank you once again for coming on.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.